The one who made you has certain rights to say how reality works because he made reality. They have to be treated with the humanity that they never lose.
Because we so easily conflate ideas with identity.
An important line for us to understand if we were going to live important lives. We were made in some fashion to be able to create value.
Hello and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And Jonathan and I just got back from Capstone, which, if you are not familiar with it, it is the fourth of our four events in Ascend, which is our flagship post-high school program. And we get to host that in an absolutely gorgeous location out in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. And not only is it one of our favorite events because it is an absolutely amazing location and you just get to walk out from any of the sessions and see the mountains, but it's also, I think, one of our favorites as far as content goes. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Jonathan.
Yeah, I think it's Capstone is always bittersweet, so it's always an interesting answer, David. It's really cool for us because, you know, as we work with students coming in, by Capstone you actually know them. And so it's like, by Capstone you're like, all right, I really know these students, I've got some depth to them. And then Capstone also is the last event for some of our students because it's the culmination of the year, and so there's a little bittersweet part there. It's also fun in terms of content because this is the content that sort of strikes the deepest because now we all understand each other. And so there's a relational capital. There's some more vulnerability that we can share. There's some more direct content that we can share. And then students have long since lost any shyness about sticking their hands in the air and saying, wait a second, what do you mean by that? And all of that comes together to create a really special event that's always meaningful for those who attend. And that includes staff. I'm not afraid to admit that I generally have some leaky eyes at various points through Capstone and a little bit of a lump in my throat as I wave the buses goodbye in that last one. Normally we wave the buses goodbye and say, see you at blank. And in this case, we'll see most of them at Apex, but not all of them. And there's something always a little bit bittersweet about that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there. It is so cool to just see the culmination of the relationships and just how the students grow over the year, and to have that culminate at Capstone is super cool. But something that you and I were just talking about before we hit record was we were just talking about kind of some of our themes and takeaways that we saw from this Capstone. And one that really stood out to us is a theme that we talk about a lot in Unbound. And I think it is not a stretch to say it is one of the most foundational principles that we really informs everything that we do here at Unbound. And that is a concept of the Imago Dei. Now, if you have been in Christian circles or in theological circles for a long time, that is going to immediately ring a bell, but there's a decent chance that some of our listeners hear that and go, what language is that and why should I care and why is it so important? So Jonathan, give us a little bit of an introduction for those who might not be familiar with that concept.
Latin, it defines your identity and it is the most important thing in the world. So I think those are the, those are the short answers to it.
Well, there you go. Perfect.
I think that it's worth rolling this back just a little bit to understand why we stress this so much. And for those of you who listen and aren't involved in Unbound's programs, this is still relevant. I'm going to explain this in context of Unbound's programs, but it's relevant beyond that. So hang with me for a second here. One of the things that we go to great lengths to say is that we are, I use the term, and I sometimes get chastised for this, but I use the term unapologetically Christian. And what I mean about that is that Unbound is transparently, honestly, and forthrightly Christian. And we tell folks that, you know, you don't have to subscribe to a system of belief and you don't even have to be Christian to join Unbound, but you do have to know that we are. And so I tell folks, you can come, you can even argue with us. That's fine. That sharpens all of us. And we're not opposed to that whatsoever. But if you come and you're offended because we're Christian, we don't have a lot of patience for that, right? I mean, we'll still love you, but we don't really, we're like, well, you know, you knew we were Christian before you came in. We told you that. That's up front, right? But then when you're a Christian organization, I think this is a personal thing. And so everybody listen carefully. I think one of the things that I get concerned about from Christian parachurch, which means organizations are not actually churches, but related to churches, one of the things I get concerned about is that they have a tendency to think that they're churches. And so, in other words, they start to do Christian things, and then they start to do more and more things that only churches ought to do. And we're really serious about saying we train and equip young adults to be excellent members of local churches, but we're not trying to supplant, compete with, or in any way take the role of a local church. So that means that there's a reality here that we have to acknowledge, which is that there's denominational differences across Christianity, and some of those are pretty stark. And so one of the challenges for us as Unbound is to say, if we're going to be unapologetically, seriously Christian, and we have a definition for that if you're curious, you can go to our website, but I would, you know, in shorthand say we are seriously Christian, little o orthodox biblical Christianities, meaning however you'd like to phrase it, traditional, historical, we're pretty serious about our faith, and we're pretty serious about it, conforming to what would be considered sort of standard in 2,000 plus years of Christian history. And so then we have to say, well how do we train young adults and stand on things that are really, really solid, no matter what your denominational differences would be? And one of those core ideas would be this idea of the Imago Dei that comes right from the very beginning of Genesis, where, you know, God made him in his image, male and female, he made them. And that line, I think, we think, Unbound thinks, is the most profound and important line for us to understand if we are going to live important lives. And when I say important lives, you know, we define that as, lives where you can thrive. And we have a whole definition for that, which we talked about in previous podcasts. And so to talk about the Imago Dei means to make a foundational statement about reality. And we break it into these three things. When you understand that you are made in the image of God, first you understand you don't need to seek your identity. You are given identity. And we actually spent some time at Capstone saying, you don't really get to pick your identity. That's a myth. Or we might be a little bit more blunt and say, that's a lie. You're given your identity. Mm-hmm. You didn't get to pick your name. You don't get to pick your sex. You don't get to pick where you live, where you're born, all those kinds of things. You get to do some of those things later in terms of where you live. But you know, you're given an identity. And so as Christians, we're given this amazing identity. We're made in the image of God. Well, that also defines our most important relationship. If we're made in the image of God, logically, we have a creator, and it becomes very important to understand why that creator made us. And so that means you have an identity, you have a primary relationship and an ordering. If the one who made you has certain rights to say how reality works because he made reality. So that means we have to conform to his moral laws and guidelines. And then secondly, coming out of that is that it gives us an immediate instruction on how to treat other people. Everybody you meet is made in the image of God if they're human. And so that means every person that you meet, in our definition of person would then be a human and made in the image of God. So that defines how we treat other people. And finally, it implies that if we're made for a reason. And we say that that also comes from Scripture. You are made to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. Both Matthew and Mark have those specific verses in them. And so consequently, just by stating that very simple thing, that we're going to focus on the image of God, we're basically saying to our students and to others who associate with us, that means that fundamentally, we have answers that are important for you to understand about who you are, your identity, your relationship to the one who made you, the way you relate to other people, and the mission that you have in life. And, you know, if we could spend 3 years helping somebody figure that out, that's a pretty significant foundational place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So taking a little bit of a devil's advocate position here, Jonathan, on this point, because spoiler alert, I personally think that it's incredibly important and I agree with all those points. If somebody is coming from a perspective where they don't necessarily see this or understand this, they might say, okay, made in the image of God, that sounds a little bit ambiguous and a little bit like, you know, you just are kind of carbon copying God, and that, like, there's just ambiguity, and like, how does that actually inform all of these things, like our identity and like the value of people? Why is this actually as impactful as you're saying it is?
So we use C.S. Lewis's line a lot. You've never met a mere mortal, meaning that there's a connection here that if you're made in the image of God, and if God's promise is real, that you have an immortality ahead of you, in C.S. Lewis's words, either an everlasting splendor or an immortal horror, then that has significant implications the way you interact with other people. So there's a time element to that. But I think, David, more directly to your question, this idea of being made in the image of God, first of all, let me be clear. I don't make any attempt to say that I fully understand that. I don't understand that all the implications of it. I think that is a wonderment.
If you want to go find people who think that they do have full implications of that, a few Google searches and you can find theologians who will be happy to try to give you full explanations.
And you should probably be pretty nervous about them.
Yeah, so, mm-hmm, exactly.
I think we should start with this humility. We're not God. And so consequently, mm-hmm, I don't think we can have a full answer to that. And so part of it is you know, we talk about in Unbound that we come from a questions-based paradigm, which starts with this idea that we're not God. We don't know all things. And so consequently, we should be people in a position of constantly asking questions. And one of the questions is, what does it mean to be made in the image of God? So having clearly stated, and I want to restate, I don't know the answer to that. I think I have been thinking about this and praying about this and studying this for a long time. And so I have some inferences that I feel comfortable in sharing. And so one is, to be made in the image of God is to believe scripture. That's clearly stated literally right at the beginning of Genesis that God made them in his own image, male and female, he made them. And you can get the nuances in the translation, but it all says basically the same thing. So that says in some function, we are made in the image of God, meaning that we share some of the characteristics of God. Now, I think the sum of the characteristics is an important thing there. I'm not stating I'm God, you're God, we're God. This is not some new age garbage, mm-hmm, here. We're talking about made in the image of God, but that means we share some characteristics of God. It also means that if we're made in the image of God, that implies something holy, something special, something set apart, and something serious about every person. And so that's where, you know, we get two implications here. To be made in the image of God and to share some of the characteristics of God means that we should say, okay, well, so what are the characteristics of God? And one of the things we talk about a lot in Unbound is that God is creative. I mean, look at creation, right? Mm-hmm. And so consequently, we have some sort of mandate to each be creative in our own way. Now, God is infinite. So consequently, to be made in the image of God means not that we're all carbon copies. It means exactly the opposite, that we all reflect some piece of the one who made us. And since God is infinite, then we'll all reflect something slightly different, but we share some of these characteristics. So David is creative in being able to, I think, just sometimes mentally think about my computer and fix it, right? You know, he has incredible talent in that area. And of course, lots of other areas as well, especially when it comes to smoked meat. I have talents in different areas. We have friends who have talents as artists. We have friends who have talents in construction. Like in other words, I don't think there's a limitation here or a standard. I think that, you know, the idea is that we were made in some fashion to be able to create value. So that has an implication. The one that we spend more time, though, I think, with our students, as important as that is, that's maybe almost a practical outreach. I think the fundamental one is that to be made in the image of God means to share some characteristics of God, but made in God's image also implies a dignity, a respect, and something that cannot be ignored, which is we're not just made in the image of God, but then in the fulfillment of the New Testament, God sent his son, Jesus, to die for us. So we're also been made in the image of God and saved into that image. And so consequently, that implies that we are both made in the image of God and fully redeemable. And as far as I know, there are no exceptions to that. Now, that doesn't mean that people, mm-hmm, cannot give themselves to evil. So we're not naive here. There are evil people in the world, and we have to minimize that and adjust for that and to do that. But we always have to treat evil as something that exists apart from the humanity that it's often actionable in. And we have to recognize, mm-hmm, that each human, even if infused with evil, still bears a dignity and a worth and an opportunity to be redeemed because they're made in the image of God that we simply can't ignore. And that has, I think, massive implications for the way we treat other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I think is one of the most important outworkings of this idea that I come back to so often. Jonathan, the way that you often put it when you're giving this presentation to students is that we do not have the luxury of fighting orcs, yeah, when it comes to combating evil. And that essentially just means that it is so easy for us, I think, especially in our current cultural moment, to look at people who are, you know, participating in things that are we disagree with or we have problems with, and oftentimes rightly so. There are people who are actively promoting harmful and evil ideas, but the thing that's so easy for us to do is to then dehumanize the people who are behind, who are advocating for those ideas. And it's very easy for us to look to tear down and fight against specifically the people and not just the ideas. And that's a very easy line to cross over, but it's a very important line and one that I think it is one of the defining characteristics, and I think should be one of the defining characteristics of how we approach bringing about the new heaven and the new earth as Christians, is that we are not looking to tear down an enemy. We're not looking to destroy a group of people who are different than us. We are looking to destroy the evil that is being perpetuated and that other humans have fallen into the trap of promoting, but we are looking to save the other humans from those harmful things rather than destroying the humans themselves. And so it's really difficult in today's culture because we so easily conflate ideas with identity. It is far too easy for us to look at someone who promotes an idea that we disagree with and then dismiss them as just someone who is promoting a harmful identity, and it dehumanizes them. And as Christians, we cannot afford to do that. And so that's why I think this has massive, massive practical outworkings with how we look at, treat, and talk with other people.
Yeah, I was... You know, it's helpful sometimes to have analogies, David. So I think that's well spoken in terms of like, you know, we have to always see the people. And we joke about this with our students. Remember, our students have almost always flown to our events. And if you've flown on airlines anytime recently, you know, there's a dehumanizing process that's frustrating, right? there can be some real frustrations with TSA. There can be some real frustrations with desk agents and airlines and all those things. And look, I could do a series of podcasts about the fury and frustration I feel about those bureaucracies and those large corporations and how they've probably been taken over by evil. But anyhow, I digress. But I also state this. I can never, ever conflate my frustration with the bureaucracy and the bad government policy that set up TSA with the TSA agent in front of me, who, even if they're acting as a bureaucratic power-hungry dingbat, is still made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. And the desk agent who is, you know, spouting some ridiculously stupid rule about how, you know, they're not responsible for the fact that they canceled my flight, that can be incredibly, unbelievably frustrating. And I can get all kinds of wrapped around the axle about how upset I am about airlines. But the desk agent is made in the image of God. And so any interaction that I have with the TSA agent or the desk agent has to start with that presupposition, and that immediately rules out things. I can't scream and curse at either one of those people, no matter how much frustrated I might be. That would be dishonoring somebody made in the image of God. And now we're way past whether TSA is right or wrong or whether my flight should or shouldn't have been canceled. We're now into well and truly into a sin reaction that I'm responsible for. And so there's something fundamentally important about just understanding this in terms of how I relate to people. I was thinking, David, about analogy. I think, you know, I'm trying to think of something universal, right? I think universally, everybody listening to this says somebody who sells cocaine or crack or heroin is by definition a not very good person. And even if you're a drug dealer, I think at some level, you're justifying that with an eye roll rather than with sincerity. Right. I mean, like you know that you're profiting by damaging other people. And so I think this gives us an interesting example to play with and say, you know, here's where real world life hits the image of God stuff, right? So first we run into the addict. So here's this person.
Is your high school senior's final year feeling overwhelming? You want them prepared, but without all the extra pressure. That's where Explore by Unbound comes in. Explore gives students coaching, hands-on projects, and courses in life and study skills, plus Christian worldview training and optional dual credit. They'll graduate with confidence, resilience, and clarity about their next steps. Enrollment prices increase soon, so don't wait. Learn more at beunbound.us/explore.
You know, they're a shell of themselves. They're addicted to this substance. They're doing unspeakable things. They're probably living in some horrible conditions. And we have lots of options there. But one of the options we don't have is to despise them as being some sort of trash. We have to see them as this is a person who's broken, but who's made in the image of God and fully redeemable, and they have to be treated all times like that. They might have to be treated firmly. No, you can't. You have to go to this detox place and you can't have these drugs. They might be need to be treated carefully. No, you can't have access to my bank account. Like, you know, I mean, there's wisdom, by the way, you have to deal with them, but they have to be dealt with the dignity that comes from being made in the image of God. Now we get on to the drug dealer. Okay, this person is knowingly putting poison into the streets that kills other people and hurts other people. Do they require justice? They do. Should there be punishment for that? There should. But that punishment and that justice has to come recognizing the dignity of being made in the image of God, which means it has to be just as far as we are capable. It has to be proportionate. And even if you put somebody in prison, they have to be treated with the humanity that they never lose, despite their bad decisions. And then, you know, as we go on up the line, let's say a cartel leader, there's somebody that's maybe really succumbed to evil. And so we should be extremely cautious in dealing with them. We are not likely to, you know, we're likely to put ourselves and others in danger. And there may be extreme, you know, actions need to be taken against that person. But those extreme actions need to be taken by the proper government authorities. You know, Paul says the government does not bear the sword in vain. And it has to be done in a just fashion. And it has to be done as far as possible while honoring the dignity of that person, even if you might have to carry out pretty significant punishment, even to the point of military operations against that person. So that rules out us being the Punisher as much as a comic book character might be great, because that doesn't allow for those things. And so I think there's just some, you know, this is not a call to be naive, and this is not a call to ignore evil, and this is not a call to tolerate evil. It's instead to put all those things in the context that I think is most important, which is we can't escape that the people we run to are made in the image of God. So
yeah, and I think to circle back to something that you mentioned earlier on in our discussion, that bringing in the New Testament side of this as well, and the fact that you know, God's redemption can reach anyone who is made in the image of God, I think is another really, really important piece of this too. So to your point, you know, anyone from the addict to the dealer to the cartel leader, God still has just as much of a desire for the salvation of any one of them as he does for us. And I think that's a really, really important factor to recognize, because in human terms, in just our own understanding and our own just natural world understanding of how we feel like justice should work, we feel like there's very little redemption that should be offered to any of them. And if it's going to be offered to any of them, then it should be much more for the addict than and then the dealer, and then the cartel leader should have just none offered to them whatsoever. But you know, it is very important to always remember that God's ways are not our ways, and so we don't get to dehumanize, and we don't get to say like, oh, I, you know, there's no way that this person is beyond the power of God's redemption. Putting limits on God's ability to accomplish his will in the world, I think, is one of the most dangerous assumptions and conclusions that you can come to as a Christian. And so practically, does that necessarily look like we should, you know, immediately go just like walk up to, you know, a dangerous cartel leader and start preaching the gospel? Well, maybe if that's specifically what God's calling you to, but there's also some practical wisdom that would probably indicate that that's not a great idea. But I think that, you know, taking a couple steps back from that, that just allows us to, when we consider how our attitudes and just like the actions that we take towards people that we, you know, that we consider, like, it should just give us a little bit of a pause, and maybe we still take action to directly combat their actions and the ideas that they're putting forward. But I think just having the consideration in mind in every interaction that there, that God is wanting to work a redemptive miracle in their life, just like he is looking to work a redemptive miracle in the life of every person who is made in his image, I think is a very important step that can be incredibly transformational and helpful, no matter who you're interacting with or what you're doing.
I think it is both difficult and it is relieving at the same time. It's difficult because there is something in us that says, I would really like to just fight orcs. I'd really like to just punch this person in the nose. I'd really like to write this person off and no longer deal with them. And I think that option
is an easier solution.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that, you know, you can't walk away from a poisonous relationship and all those things, but you have to do it in the context of recognizing that person's, you know, imago, being made in the image of God, the imago Dei. So that's the hard part. The good part is that, you know, we had a speaker years ago that said 100% is easier than 99 came to Apex. And so the 100% is easier than 99. It's all people. You know, you don't have to say it's evil people. It's redeemed people. It's brothers and sisters in Christ. It's those who are not in Christ. It's those who are persecuting you. Jesus said to love your enemies. Like you don't. And so in that sense, you don't have to think twice about it. I was like, oh, is this the person that I treat in the image of God? Is this the person? No, every person, no matter what their stance is to you, no matter what they're doing to you, has to be treated in the image of God. Now, again, we're not saying that you have to be naive. We're not saying that you can't have wisdom. We're not saying you can't have discernment. Look, I'm telling you that if I'm walking down a dark street and I see a gang of young men coming towards me, swinging chains and looking like they're drinking, you know, from cheap liquor bottles, and they're looking to, you know, mug somebody, I just don't walk down the street. Oh, the main image guy's no problem. Now, I'm probably going to find an exit so that I don't have to interact with that particular group at that point in time, right? I mean, so, but it would mean that if I did have to interact with them, even if they're going to mug me and take my wallet and maybe beat me up, I do have to keep in mind that the way I treat them has implications for eternity. And that's sobering. And I don't claim to know that that means I have answers to every single social situation, but I do claim that this means that I have something fundamental and foundational to consider in every social situation. And, you know, it makes a difference. Going back to the TSA and the flight agent stuff, let me just state clearly, I have significant and serious philosophical problems with TSA. And I've had some very frustrating experiences with them. I also really dislike the way airlines treat us in terms of both their service and their policies. I think they're just incredibly frustrating and infuriating. Having said that, it's also worth noting there's advantages here that sometimes are unseen. I almost never have a really bad experience with a TSA agent or a flight desk attendant. I almost never have bad experience, customer service experience in a store. And why is that? Well, I don't fully know, but I think it starts with when people see that you know, I try to look at each person and the first thought I have hit my mind, made in the image of God. And I think if that's your first thought, there you can't help for that to bleed through, to be apparent in some fashion. And so what I generally have is I have people that might be giving me frustrating news, but they're trying really hard to do it as nicely as possible. And sometimes they're doing it in a way that, you know, they give me exceptions and stuff like that. I'm not going to say I always get the best deal from the flight, flight desk. I'm not going to say that, you know, I've never had a disagreement and I think a TSA agent did something frustrating or something like that. I'm just saying that it's very rare. And I think that that comes from, you know, when you start with looking out in the world and seeing each person saying made in the image of God, I think that conveys something very important, and other people pick up on that in a way that I don't fully understand. And yet, I can tell you that I live out on a daily basis. So I see the results of that on a daily basis.
Yeah. It affects all sorts of things, from little things like that to larger relationships. The example that immediately comes to mind for me recently is one that is on a little bit of a hot button topic, in that there is a friend of mine that I have been friends with for quite a few years, who grew up in Christianity, who has just recently decided to enter into a homosexual relationship. And so that, now to be clear here, like, I'm not saying that exactly how I dealt with this is exactly how everybody should deal with this. Like, there's a lot of nuance and a lot of different circumstances that can unfold, but I could tell that he was really wrestling with just like his faith and how that interacted with like his identity. And he unfortunately had a lot of people who just immediately in his life, who came from his faith community, write him off and just not want to interact with him, or started treating him almost like a leper. And I just wanted to still continue and just say, like, hey, I haven't had any qualms about saying I disagree with the choices that you're making here. Like, I believe that God calls this a sin, but at the same time, like, I don't love you any less and I still want to see you have an amazing relationship with God, and I want to walk with you through this, and I don't get to just discount you and set you to the side just because this you are participating in this thing that I believe God calls a sin. And so we've had a lot of really, really good dialogue about that, and has allowed me to keep the relationship open, and has allowed for continued conversation. I have no idea where he's going to end up. I have no idea if eventually he's going to end up renouncing that or not. But I also don't believe that that's necessarily my responsibility. My responsibility is to treat him as if he is made in the image of God. And that's just affected how I have gone about handling that relationship. And I think it's been kind of a helpful guide for me as I've worked through this situation and just all of my conversations with him.
I appreciate you sharing that story, David, because that's a hard spot to be. And I agree with everything you're saying there. I might just add a few pieces of depth for folks to consider. And you know, when we say consider, we're pretty serious about the whole local church thing. So if you're confused about some of this stuff, you should, I mean, you're welcome to disagree with us and send us feedback, but you should definitely talk to your local church authorities and pastors and elders and things of that nature. And so you know, remember, we're not trying to be a church here. But I do think as Christians, we wrestle together on this and we can help each other get better. And I think that this Imago Dei idea really is a blueprint for David in so many ways, right? In his situation and for other situations. So being made in the image of God implies a couple of things. It implies exactly what David said. Regardless of the sin, we still have to treat our friend who is doing something we think is destructive, as made in the image of God. That means with full dignity. And so that should give us release. Like, we don't have to stop loving somebody. But at the same time, mm-hmm. being made in the image of God first relates us to a proper relationship with our Creator. And a proper relationship with our Creator is that God is the Creator, not us. God is God and we're not God. And so there's a gulf there that we have to acknowledge. And it also means that we have to say, and since you made me, you get to set the rules. And so, you know, if you set mm-hmm. the rules, then loving you, so that how it relates to other people, as seeing you as made in the image of God, one of the things that means is that I love you. And I love you, I have to point you to these rules, right? Like that, and I have to follow mm-hmm. them as well. So this is not an excuse to be less holy. It's a call to be more holy, but to be holy in a humble way. You're made in the image of God, I'm in the image of God. But then there's a New Testament reality here, and we're both fallen. Like, we're made in the image of God, and we've destroyed that to some extent because we're marred by sin. And yet, through the redemption of Jesus Christ, we can stand unblemished before God to do that. But, you know, there's some seriousness there in terms of responsibility we have to take for our sin, and, you know, that we have to accept Christ, and there's some things that have to happen there. And so, knowing all those things, I think, to your point, David says, I don't have to know the outcome of all this, and I don't have to have all these mm-hmm. things be my job. What I have to do is I have to remember that I'm called to be holy, and for those I love, I have to share that lovingly. But I'm also called to treat other people made in the image of God, even my enemies, and this is not an enemy we're talking about here, even my enemies. Mm-hmm. So if it's even my enemies, then certainly somebody who I love and care for, even though I disagree with their current actions, is in the camp of people that I'm called to love and treat with full respect and dignity. And, you know, does that have some implications in terms of, you know, things that, you know, implications in terms of church leadership and all those things? Yes, all those things have to be worked out. But that comes after and comes in light of and comes subservient to being able to see somebody as carrying the Imago Dei, as treating them in the image of God. And I think it's both that simple and that hard. Like, I think the concept is not difficult. I think it is foundational. I think living it out is a lifetime of work. You know what I mean? And not to be taken mm-hmm. lightly. But it's also, because it's simple to understand, it means it's actionable. You know, it's a blueprint that I can use and live mm-hmm. every day. I can walk into Walmart and say, made in the image of God, made in the image of God, made in the image of God. Everybody I meet, and know immediately that has to frame the way I interact with them. And I have a difficult situation like this, I have to remember, made in the image of God, and that frames how I'm going to react to that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to kind of boil it down, it's just a framework to see the value in every human being and to recognize the innumerable worth that every person who is made in God's image has, and acknowledging the fact that they are someone who is eternal, and that the God over all things loves them individually and deeply, far beyond we can imagine, and has a plan for them. And yeah, I completely agree. That makes it so incredibly simple, and also so incredibly challenging to look at every single person, because there are a lot of people that you will interact with to different extents, and to see that in all of them. But I think the more that we are able to recognize that, and the more we are able to grasp the weight of that, I think the more that we will be able to treat others like Christ treated them, and like God would have us treat them, so that we can fulfill the Great Commission all the more.
Well, it's worth noting, and you know, listeners, you should check this. This is not an unbound idea. This is a Christian idea that dates from the first chapter of Genesis, and so this is not new. This is not something unique, but it is something that's worth focusing on. And I can say, as a matter of hope and excitement, you want to have an amazing experience, hang out with 100+ people who are working really hard to see each other's made in the image of God. It is exhilarating. It is heartwarming. It is touching. It is moving. It is tear inducing in all the good ways. It is energizing, and it's what it's like to be part of Unbound. You know, we had so many people come to us and say, the most important thing I learned in my 1 year, 2 year, 3 years in Unbound is this idea of the Imago Dei. It's transformed how I work. It's transformed how I deal with my family. It's fixed relationships that were broken. I had one young man come to me afterwards. He said, I've heard you say this like 10 times, and I think this was the time that I actually understood it. And I just want you to know, I walked around all day yesterday quietly weeping as I just realized the implication and really felt the weight of that in every interaction that I had. And then I think maybe one of my favorite comments, the young man came to me and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, I just want you to know, when I leave these places, I never feel like I'm leaving. I feel like I got sent. And I think that there's something important about that, to believe in the Imago Dei as a concept. And when I say Imago Dei, it's to believe in this order that God has created. I don't want to get confusing about, like, you know, to believe in God is what we're talking about. And this is an aspect of understanding about what God calls us to. To believe in that is to be sent. It is to understand that you have a mission and a purpose and a reason. And, you know, glory be to God. If we get to hang out with people who take that seriously, and we can play some small role in translating that, and maybe pulling some emphasis to that. We didn't create it. We didn't make it up. We didn't craft it. We are merely teaching that which we were taught. And I think that that has some profound implications on a bunch of different levels. And so we'd leave you with that. And then maybe there's encouragement. To learn more, you can go to beunbound.us. If you want to be part of a community like that, well, then check out our high school programs and our post-high school program, Ascend. And, you know, we end this podcast by saying be unbound. As we say it this time, we call you to be unbound. Think about that in terms of the Imago Dei. Be the kind of person who sees another person, the first thing they think of is made in the image of God. And then bring that prayer to the one who made you and say, what does that mean? What are the implications for that about how I treat other people? So thanks again for listening. Until next time, be unbound.